email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Phil Coulter. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, Ray. Good to see you again.
Yeah. I couldn't hear myself there for a moment, but I can hear myself now. PhilCoulter.com, because you're doing so many gigs from now until Christmas and into the new year. I couldn't possibly mention them all, but they're all there. And I'll just mention a few of them. Like tomorrow night, you're in on Greenawn in Letterkenny.
Mm-hmm.
You're in Harvey's Point then Wednesday 20th. There's other ones in between there. Drake in Blanchardstown. Seamus Tíre Theatre in Tralee.
National Concert Hall, I think, in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, National Concert Hall, 27th of November. And this is more songs, stories, melodies and memories.
That's the whole thing. Yeah.
So you're giving us a sort of a taster menu of that now today.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, listen, I was feeling good about looking back on 60 years in the music business and being like a few songs on my belt until you played all those Paul Simon songs. No, I feel like a complete failure.
No, I was halfway through and I was going, Phil Coulter sitting out there listening to those and I was going, is that a good idea?
Yeah, that's a proper songwriter. Yeah. That's a proper songwriter. He would get my vote every time, you know. Songwriters are a kind of a breed, you know, but he is proper. These days, it's been a bit devalued, Ray, you know, because like it seems to me that the concept of singer is doesn't exist. No, it's singer stroke songwriter, as if it were that easy. It ain't that easy.
No.
You know, it ain't that easy.
And to get that combination of both is...
Yeah, it's asking quite special. It's taking a lot of boxes, you know. I mean, it's. I keep saying this till I'm blue in the face. Songwriting is a craft,
right?
You know, if you're gonna be in it for the long haul, you know, if you're gonna make a career out of songwriting, you have to learn it as a craft. You know, I mean,
there must be a talent.
And well, then, to begin with,
yes,
to begin with,
because
absolutely.
I'd imagine there are people listening even now who have tried to write a hit for years and years and years and failed.
Yeah, it's not that easy.
Now, there's a bit of luck involved as well. But an element.
But you know, like the man said, you make your own luck. You've got to be in the right place at the right time. Yeah. You've got to have the right equipment, you know. I mean, it is. It's a craft. You might be born with like a flair for music, maybe a good command of language. But you have to learn how to craft a song, you know. You have to learn to structure a song, you know, beginning, middle and end. You know, there's an arc to a song. And if you want your songs to be around. In fact, I was asked quite recently for a short definition of a great song.
I'm taking notes.
Well, it was an American, they always asked awkward questions. Mr. Coulter, could you give me a definition of a great song? Not a big definition, you know. I don't want to hear about melody or, you know, a short definition. I said, I'll do better than that. I'll give you a one-word definition of a great song. Longevity.
Right.
Song's been around for 50 years. It's a great song. Simon and Garfunkel. How long have they been around? Those are great songs, de facto.
Over 50 years.
Yeah.
First hit in 1964.
Yeah. Now,
you had your first hit in 1964 as well, did you?
I did. Me and Paul have a lot in common.
Yes, right.
I think he's done slightly better than I have. Yeah, but no, he'd be one of my heroes. Yeah, that 1964, I had my first hit with Butch Moore and the Capital Showman.
Yeah.
A song called Foolin' Time. That was, you know, I can trace it all back to that. You know, it's very easy for me. You know, the dots go right back to 1964. That came about, right? I did that as a student record up in Queens. Some bright spark had dreamed up the idea of a student record to raise funds in the Rag Week, you know. So I was game as hell. I had a little four-piece band. So we got into one of the university common rooms, grabbed a guy who had a tape recorder. That was it. Released Foolin' Time. I'd written that. We sold a few 1,000 copies, I suppose, and strolled about the campus like rock stars, you know, for all of 3 weeks before it was, you know, 9 Day Wonder. But then the song got picked up by Butch, and it became a top three record.
Right.
I'm still a student at that stage. So from that moment on, from the moment that record went into the charts, Ray, I was unemployable. Because up here, I thought, no, I'm a songwriter. I'm a hit songwriter. I was anything but. I had an awful lot to learn. But that gave me my entree. That kind of set the whole machinery going.
But there was more a sort of a laid out pathway then. Like you went to the equivalent of Tin Pot Alley.
Tin Pan Alley.
So that was in America, was it?
No, that was in... It was the real Tin Pan Alley would be the Brill Building in New York. That's where all the great songwriters, you know, all the Goffin and Kings.
And you did London version of that.
Yeah, the Denmark Street in London was our Tin Pan Alley, you know. And during that period, you know, I'm talking about, I went there in 64. So the 60s and the 70s, it was a great conglomeration of talent, coming to London from the provinces. You know, the music business had been largely controlled by the Variety Club and London-based things. The music industry, you know, hit songs like "How Much Is That Doggy in the Window?"
Right.
You know, so come rock and roll, Elvis Presley, Buddy Holly, all that, changed the face of pop music.
So, you were there for the birth of sort of popular music as we know it now.
Well, I would have thought that, you know, my contemporaries like Greenaway and Cook and Murray and Callender, great songwriters, would have written Graham Gouldman of 10cc. They were the guys that wrote the Great British Songbook.
Yeah.
And they were all contemporaries of mine. They were all learning. We're all learning our craft. You know, when I tell you that my deal with the publisher was that every second Friday we went into a little demo studio behind the post room, way in the bowels of the building, and had to demo six new songs, words, music, and little arrangement for the house band. But the important thing was the following Monday we had to play them to our publisher, who was an old time. You know, he had discovered great songwriters like Jimmy Kennedy and Kennedy and Carr, Lionel Bart. He knew his stuff. Right. He would listen to the songs, six songs, and as often as not, Ray, he'd throw them in the bin.
Right.
Throw them in the bin. Sounds cruel, but you had to learn. Yeah. Don't fall in love with everything you write. You know, and his constant theme was economy. You know, he used to tell me, "Mr. Coulter, I know you've been to university and you know a lot about music. You don't have to prove it every time you write a passage."
Uh-huh.
And he took me to the window one day to illustrate the point, and there was a traffic jam outside Denmark Street. And he said, "You see the man driving the truck? That's the man you should be thinking about when you're writing a pop song, not your university professor."
But like all those great pop songs that you've written, like Puppet on a String, and would you tell people you are back now in vogue? This is how did you hear about this? Did you seek your permission or?
Right, I have to tell you, I'm cool.
Yes, you're cool.
Finally, I am cool. As an 82-year-old songwriter, I am cool. Finally. Yeah. I got a phone call from one of my grandkids to say, "Pops, you're in the charts." So what? Jade from Little Mix, they don't release singles anymore. She has dropped her first single.
Yeah.
And it starts with Sandy Shaw singing Puppet on a String for six or seven bars. So
here, I'll just let you, have you got headphones over there? No, you won't be able to hear this. No, I'll pull down the microphone so you can hear it.
Let's do something crazy.
It goes off then. Yeah. Here's just for people at home.
I wonder if one day that you say that. You,
that's the original, Sandy Shaw. They don't, that's it. They only use that clip.
Six bars.
They don't loop it or.
It's called a sample. No, yeah. But that's enough. That's enough for me to be a co-writer on the record.
And ka-ching.
All of the above, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's the one good thing about samples. The great thing about that, Ray Darcy, was that normally you have to work very hard to get, even to get a record released, let alone to get a record in the chart. But for this one, I had to do nothing. It dropped on my lap. And it was lovely, you know, to see.
What year is that from, Sandy Shaw's Puppet on the String?
1967. Won the Eurovision in 1967.
Yeah.
That was the best way to announce your arrival in Denmark Street as a songwriter. It was the first time the UK had won the Eurovision Song Contest.
And you'd more Eurovision success with Cliff Richard.
Following year was Congratulations, yes. Came second.
And then, there's a story behind that, is there? Who won that year?
Congratulations became second, went on to become a standard. You know, that's a song which has fed, clothed and educated several of my children.
Of which you have many.
Of which I have more than my fair share, yeah. But the song that won was from Spain. It was called La La La, and that rocketed into obscurity. It hasn't really been much heard since. There was something. There was an investigative journalist in Spain who did a whole kind of a program on it, and he contended that Franco, in order to project a more kind of friendly and cool image of Spain, had sent TV executives through all of the European television stations to kind of bribe them to vote for Spain,
right,
with promises of holidays in Ibiza or cases of Rioja wine. I don't know, but that was the theory anyway. I don't know if that happened or not. Yeah. But
One Direction didn't win X Factor.
Yeah.
As you say, Congratulations was a way bigger hit.
I have
It'll go on forever.
I have no complaints about that, certainly not. Those, I mean, You don't get it's hard to write a song like that these days, you know. I mean, I don't know how you would go about it. One of the things I'm most grateful for, apart from the fact that I've survived in the game for 60 years, is that it was at a period when songs were still songs, you know. That thing about the durability of songs. Any professional songwriter, his goal is to write copyrights that are going to exist, you know.
Yeah.
That's the thing about the TikTok generation. Those songs are for instant gratification.
Is there anybody you like who's writing songs at the moment?
Ed Sheeran.
Right.
Why? Because he's an old-fashioned songwriter, you know. Still, you know, if you were to say to me, go to the top 10, Phil, and pick me a song that you can do instrumental.
Yeah.
I couldn't. But what I can do is play an Ed Sheeran song. Because why? Because he writes melodies. You know, he's got that. He writes hooks, and he writes songs that people can sing along with. And it's not that he's reinvented the wheel, you know. Even you know, it's still like he still uses like four chords,
right.
But I mean, he's just got that. You know, it's just the next melodies.
Perfect.
You just like that. I can play on the piano.
Yes.
You know, which is a good test also. No, he would be, he's an old school songwriter.
Right.
Definitely Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran.
And you know, see Ed Sheeran on stage, he doesn't need the bells and whistles, he doesn't need dancing girls, and he doesn't need pyrotechnics.
On his own.
Him and his wee guitar
and his loop pedals.
Yeah, in his pedals and his check shirt.
Yeah.
That's because why? It's about the songs.
Yeah.
You know?
You're going to sing a few because it's memories. They're great memories, and it's about the songs as well. And as I say, you're all over the place, and it's philcoulter.com. What would you like to sing us a bit of? Her?
You can have your choice of so many. I mean, the song here's a wee song that I wrote this during the Troubles in the North. I just imagine a young couple that you know, were dreaming of getting away somewhere else where the life would be a bit simpler. And then here's a story. Last year I got a call from one of those agencies that settle the Ukrainians, particularly from Cavan. He said, we have a lot of Ukrainians up here and they have gravitated to your song Steal Away.
We had two of them in.
Did you?
We know the whole, I've seen the documentary.
Did you?
So, yeah.
That for me, that was one of the most heartwarming
things.
Yes,
and you performed it with the Ukrainian choir.
Yeah.
Steal Away.
Steal Away.
Yeah.
Steal away, let's steal away. No reason left to stay. For me and you, let's start anew. And darling, steal away. Yeah, we did that then in Ukrainian. Давай, фейчен, давай, но фейчен. О, сей, як сон, мине. It was lovely.
Yeah.
It was just lovely.
And of course, you're from Derry, and were many of your contemporaries stealing away during the Troubles? I would imagine that's a story that hasn't often been told.
Yeah, there was a big migration into Donegal.
Was there?
Know?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, because there was, you know, during things were pretty highly charged up there. For example, internment. I happened to be up visiting folks on the weekend. Internment's introduced. And what happened there? The British intelligence was so poor that they threw the net pretty damn wide. So if you played GAA, if you spoke Irish, if you went to Katie dances, played Irish music, you were suspect.
You would have been suspect.
Luckily I was living across the border.
Yes.
But there were guys who sat beside me in school or at college who were dragged out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning for no other reason than they were, you know, that they spoke
GAA
Irish.
Or
yeah,
whatever. Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was it. So, I mean, that was, I remember that was my first kind of political song. I wrote a song, a knee-jerk reaction song called Free the People. I was producing the Dublins at the time, and it was an anti-internment song. It wasn't a great song, but I remember when I played it to Luke Kelly, Luke, the great Fire on the Belly, you know, so he was all over that song. The Dubliners released it. It was a hit record for the Dubs. But I was aware, this is not a great song, Phil, and a song needs to be written about this situation that with a bit more depth, you know, and a bit more substance. So, but the thing about Free the People, it wasn't a great song, but it started a process in my mind that got me into that whole political thing. So it was nearly a couple of years later before I came up with The Town I Love So Well. In my memory, I will always see the town that I have loved so well, where our school played ball by the gas yard wall, and we laughed through the smoke and the smell. Going home in the rain, running up the dark lane, past the jail and down behind the fountain. Those were happy days in so many, many ways, in the town I loved so well.
Lovely. You mentioned Luke there, and of course,
yeah.
He sang Scorn, Not This Simplicity. What was he like to be around?
He was, well, as a guy, he was a firebrand, you know. He was a bit of a frustrated pop star as well, look. But I'll tell you what, he had an encyclopedic knowledge of folk music. When I took over producing the Dubliners, I had a great passion for folk music. I thought I knew something about it. But Luke's knowledge was just like comprehensive. He had spent a lot of time in the UK hanging out with the likes of Ewan McCall, Peggy Seeger, Ian Campbell, all those big English folkies. So he came back with a bag of songs. And he was the one who was continually badgering me to write songs that would go a little deeper than Puppet and Restrainer, Congratulations.
Yes.
Grown-up songs, he used to call them. Phil, going to have to write some grown-up songs. And I knew what he meant, you know, songs that would address some serious issues. Because Luke was, he had great integrity, Luke. But that, so when my first son was born with Down syndrome, I started working on the song. And I remember when I played it to Luke, his reaction, he realised that through his encouragement, I'd made that step. And it is a step, Roy, you know what I mean? Writing a song like Puppet on a String is one thing. Writing a song about a trauma, something as deeply personal as that, you kind of...
Exposing
off
yourself,
layers,
yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
Exposing yourself, yeah. Is exactly. You're peeling off layers and letting people into your most innermost thoughts. So without Kelly's encouragement, I might never have done it. See the child with the golden hair, yet eyes that show the emptiness inside. Do we know? Can we understand just how he feels? Or have we really tried? See him now, as he stands alone and watches children play a children's game. Simple child, he looks almost like the others, yet they know he's not the same. Scorn not his simplicity, but rather try to love him all the more. Scorn not his simplicity, oh no, oh no, oh no.
How do your family feel about that song?
Well, it was for me, it was therapy, really, you know, when it happened. And it's one of those things which that song, more than any other song that I've written, there's hardly a week goes by that I don't get an email nowadays. It used to be like a card or a letter from families who've discovered the song and who have had that experience of mentally or indeed a physically challenged child. So it's a song a lot of people can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
Paul died when he was four. It's one of the things that Down syndrome kids have got a weakness in their hearts. So it was kind of cruel that by that stage we'd made all the adjustments, you know. We figured that if you're going to have the experience of a mentally challenged child, a Down syndrome is as good as you're going to get, you know.
Mm.
But it was... I was like 23 years of age or something, you know. So it was a big trauma.
Very young, very young. Yeah, and it was a different time as well.
Precisely.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a family in our street that had they used to call them Mongols.
Yeah.
And when the woman we were pushing the baby in the pram, people didn't walk the other side of the street
in case they'd catch it.
In case they would, or in case they'd have to look under the pram and say something. So they were kind of hidden away, you know. So if in a small way writing a song about it is...
Destigmatised it.
To some extent, you know.
My wife and I meet Phil in Nerca in Spain in September. Mm. Was a gentleman. Did they meet them or do you meet them regularly? Is that where you hang out there?
No, I think
there?
We just bumped into
them. Just bumped into them, yeah. Phil Coulter and Luke Kelly, a match made in heaven.
Ha, ha, ha.
Because it's sort of like you're nearly worlds apart in a way.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very unlikely combination.
Yes.
Very unlikely combination. Luke was steeped in all that. Maybe he was a really entrenched socialist and steeped in all that kind of a folk tradition. But strangely enough, after all of that barracking of Luke to get away from writing for Puppet on a String or whatever and write serious songs, he comes to me. This is something I'm now well entrenched as the Dubliners producer. So he said, Phil, I think it was over a few jars one night, and he said, it was great crack when we had Seven Drunken Nights. We were on top of the pops and, you know, we were in the charts and we were all over the radio. It'd be great to do that again. Could you not come up with something? He said, so I did come up with this. Ho, ho, glory-o, now I'm the Lord's disciple. Oh, oh, glory-o, I hand me down my Bible. Got him back in the charts. Got
Did
him
it? My
pops, yeah. I got him off my back for a while, yeah.
Luke so was, frustrated pop star, you were saying.
Oh, yeah, it was a bit of that about
and of
Luke.
Of course, he was seeing you with Puppet on a String, Sandy Shaw, Cliff Richard.
Yeah.
And had you met up with the Bay City Rollers?
About that time. Yeah, when I took over the Dubliners, I haven't had a track record of winning Eurovision and you know, selling millions of records. They were singularly unimpressed.
Yeah.
That didn't cut any. I mean, the hardest part of my job was to get the buggers into the studio at 10 o'clock in the morning. That was my job.
Like Sandy Shaw, great, Cliff Richard, but then worlds apart.
Yeah.
You would imagine Bay City Rollers and the Dubliners. They are boy band and.
Yeah.
Rollicking.
Which brings me back to that whole conversation about being a craft, you know, but songwriting being a craft. When you study your craft as we did then, you know, you learn to move between genres. Plus, it's about survival, Ray, you know. If, for example, when I had that Eurovision run, if I'd thought to myself, that's it, I've got this Eurovision sussed, I'm a Eurovision expert, I'd have been dead in the water within a couple of years.
Yeah.
Equally so, when I had the Bay City Rollers and Kenny and Slick, Teeny Barber Stable, if I'd thought, this defines what I can do, I would have been dead in the water. Equally, you know, when I was working with like Planxty and the Dubliners, the Fury Brothers, Liam.
You Clancy. Produced Sweet 16.
No, that was, I took over after that.
Right.
That was a lot of fun too. I mean, I thought that producing the Dubliners had prepared me for anything. Then I took over the Fury Brothers.
There you go.
It was another day's work.
Another challenge.
another challenge. Yeah.
How did Ireland's Call, I know the history of it, why it's there, but how did you get the call? Why you?
It was a call. It was a call. I suppose, I mean, it's hard to know what they were thinking about, but my imagine is that this was in an era of hands across the border, all inclusive. There was a need. Why? Well, at the first Rugby World Cup in Australia, there had been a bomb that had been planted just at the border, which had killed a High Court justice on his way up, and maimed a couple of the Irish rugby players on the way down. So that was still very raw, as the World Cup in Australia kicked off. So rather than playing Our Round of Vain, they thought, "We better come up with something else." You're not going to believe this, right? But they played James Last playing The Rose of Tralee.
It's
a lovely song.
They did not.
It's not a song that you want to go to war with, you know.
And so, James Last.
James Last, because somebody had a tape.
But I don't know if anthems should be songs you'd want to go to. Should be songs that bring you to war. But anyway,
what they meant to do was kind of at least provoke some kind of motivate you. And that was then. I think maybe the powers that be thought. I mean, it took them quite a few years to decide that we need a song here. Plus the fact that in the squad. You know, rugby is a game which in the north of Ireland is played mostly in non-Catholic schools.
Right.
Catholic schools, it's soccer or GAA. So therefore, the Ulster players who are good enough to play for Ireland are normally from that tradition. So when they're standing there...
All-Ireland team and a good few representatives from Ulster, and you're saying they're mainly from the Protestant tradition.
So back and then, you know, when the rest of the lads were singing Our Round of Vain, they would stand tight-lipped.
Mm.
And a few of them told me they really felt very uncomfortable. And some of the lads from the south said, you know, I felt uncomfortable that the guy beside me, who I count on, you know, he's my wingman when we're on the pitch, but now he's kind of, he feels a bit ostracised by this. So that was the reasoning behind coming up with a song. Why me? I don't know, but I think the fact that I was from the north, and they thought that I might understand the sensibilities of our separated brethren.
How old is it now?
Oh, Christ, I don't know. I mean, it's 20-something 20, years. Maybe more.
And it got a lot of flack, didn't it, at the beginning?
Ray Darcy, I was getting hate mail.
Were you?
I was getting, in the early days, I was getting hate mail, yeah. And people saw it as some kind of a fudge and, you know, giving in to unionism and this, that and the other. They were all kind of conspiracy theorists. It was never meant to replace the national anthem. It was meant to be a sporting anthem, which is what it is. You know, there are still people that hate it. That's okay by me. But when I'm in Lansdowne Road and I get a full-throated version of Ireland's Call, I'll settle for that.
You know? How does that make you feel?
Good. I'll tell you why. If I'm there with a couple of my boys, for example, it's nice to know that when I've fallen off the perch and they're still going to rugby, they're going to be singing that song.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to feel that that's a
wee bit. That's a real legacy, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah.
55,000.
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a few England or Welsh or Scottish or All Black fans there as well. So, you know, averaging at 45,000.
No, that is a buzz. That is a buzz. You know, there's nothing like that. Just as if I'm driving late home from a gig or something and one of the late night DJs plays Elvis Presley singing My Boy, My Song, I mean, I have to slow down and just drink it all in and I still get a bit of a tingle. You know, the fact that, you know, as a teenager on a wee cracked up radio, listened to Radio Luxembourg when I was 16 or 17, and Presley was then the king of all he surveyed. He revolutionised pop music. And to think, never in a trillion years would I have thought in my little attic bedroom in Derry that Elvis Presley would sing one of my songs.
That's spectacular, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. That sometimes the music business does work, you know.
Yeah. My 12-year-old is a huge fan of Elvis.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
He knows a good song. Yeah. That song, you know, the one they used it on the lottery ad, The Land of Promise, I think it is. The story goes that Martin Luther King was assassinated and Elvis was in the middle of doing one of his comeback TV specials and they had to write a song. Mm. And they wrote it in 24 hours or something like that. What's the quickest you've written a song?
I'll tell you the quickest. Congratulations. When, in terms of... once I came up with the title, I'd written da 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 da. That could have been, when you think about it, that could have been, I'll always love you, I can't forget you, do you remember? In which case, the song would never have been heard of again. You know, but I distinctly remember having written the tune, and we had a little rhyming dictionary. We called it Blackie, a little black thing. And I'm going da 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 da. I wonder, is there a word that has five syllables? And I'm going through it, and da 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 da. Congratulations. I'm thinking, there has to be a song called Congratulations. I thought, I can't think of
it. So you Googled it back in 1960.
No! That would have been a lot easier. No, I thought, who could I ask? So, well, I'll go ahead and write the song anyway. So at that stage, once the title was in place and the tune was in place, it kind of wrote itself.
Because it had five syllables.
That's it. Congratulations. Yeah.
So there's a bit of a science to it now?
Well, sure. I mean, you need to know what you're doing.
Yeah. So Elvis, there, you played piano with the Rolling Stones, Tom Jones. Anybody else you want to?
Quite a few.
You're entitled to drop names. You know, you've been in the business for so long.
I was in Van Morrison's band for one famous tour in the UK and Europe, and that was great. That was like musical surfing, you know, when you're in the Van Morrison band along with some of the greatest players on the planet. You know.
Yeah. Listen, they're telling me you have to take a break, Phil. But I'm sure you have more songs to sing and more chat, more memories as well. So we'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're in the company of Phil Coulter, philcoulter.com, and Phil is all over the place, starting in Letterkenny. He's in the National Concert Hall on Wednesday, 27th of November, Pavilion Theatre, 15th of December. I see you're ringing in the new year in the Maritime Hotel in Bantry, 31st of December, welcoming in 2025. I think we were together on stage on Green On at one stage.
We did one of our auditions in Green On. Yeah, back in the days of Eurostar. Glory days, Ray Darcy. Been all downhill ever since then, I tell you. That was a lot of fun.
It was a bit of crack.
It was a great crack.
Love Phil Coulter, especially scoring on his simplicity. I have a beautiful brother, Francis. He was born Down syndrome. And myself, my mum loved that song. I saw Luke one time when I was in Dublin coming out of a shop and was too afraid to tell him how much that song meant to us. And my mum. That's Maria Burke in West Cork. And great to hear Phil. Saw him last night at Civic Tala.
Yeah.
Great night. Do you like the touring?
Oh, I do. That's what keeps me going. You know, people say at 82 years of age, Phil, where do you get the energy to go out and do 30 something dates? Well, a show like last night on Tala, they're the heartiest audience. They really are. They really, I mean, they come to enjoy themselves. They sing their hearts out. For example, at the end, we close with a kind of everybody singing Steal Away. In Tala, it's the one place where you hear men singing.
Right.
You get an audience singing along. You'll know it's the women who are doing the singing. But on Tala, everybody sings. Right. They're just out, you know, it's a big night.
And everyone knows congratulations, of course.
Another one.
Yeah. My brother was born in October 1972 with Down syndrome. My mother heard your song, Phil, just after he was born and remains her favourite. He's now 52.
There you go.
Living in Donegal. Sean McHugh, thanks for that song, says Geraldine Doherty. Grew up listening to Phil, love his music and his concerts. His songs are still emotional, says Stephen Rathfarnham. Simply the greatest songwriter of all time.
I like him. I like him. Get his phone number.
I think you've said that Paul Simon is, so anyway, it's all a matter of opinion. Anyway. could you ask Phil to give Raglan Road a blast?
I wouldn't dare.
Would you not?
No, because it's Luke Kelly's. It's like somebody doing a remake of Bridge Over Troubled Water. Leave that alone. That's a classic record by Simon and Garfunkel. I'd never be tempted to do that. Raglan Road belongs to Luke Kelly.
How do you interpret the song? Because, you know, because we have Scorn Your Simplicity, Scorn Not His Simplicity by Sinead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Simple child. He looks almost like the others, yet they know he's not the same. Scorn not his simplicity, but rather try to love him all the more.
There's that vulnerability, isn't it? In the song and Sinead's voice.
You know, how lucky am I? How fortunate, how blessed am I that one of my songs is covered by two of the greatest voices this country ever produced, Luke Kelly and Sinead O'Connor. Two vastly different readings of the song. You're right, it's that vulnerability from Sinead that is just, I mean, it just captures the song. I remember recording it. I produced an album with Sinead and we were leaving this song to do just, the band was all sent home, brought the lights down in the studio. The engineer's up there. I'm at the piano. Sinead is over there. And we just got eyeline. And we did one run through to set the key. And then she sang it like that. And when she finished, I just let the last chord ring out on the piano and just sat there. She didn't speak. I didn't speak. Even the engineer was smart enough to know something very special has happened here. Doesn't happen too often in a studio, but just she had that gift of just like breathing life into a song like that. It's capturing exactly the essence of the song.
How that's a talent, isn't it? You know.
Oh, for sure. You can't learn that.
Yeah.
You can't be taught that.
Because it's your words. Yeah. And she wrote amazing songs for herself.
Yeah.
But as an interpreter of songs, like
for sure.
I'm thinking that, I'm thinking Nothing Compares to You, you know, amazing.
She had the sensitivity, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was so much more going on with Sinead than, you know, than people would give her credit for. I thought, and she was, you know, to work with in the studio. I'll tell you the story. I was producing with Van Morrison an album called No Prima Donna, in which it was. Essentially, it was a tribute album where different stars were coming and singing Van Morrison songs. One of whom was Sinead. I'd never met her before, but I'd called her up and told her what song had been nominated for her to sing. So she came into to the studio one night. I'm up in the control room with Van Morrison, Derek Bell from the Chieftains, and a few other kind of faces up there, and Michel Rocca, etc., and a gang up there. And I see Sinead coming in, and she stops and looks up at the control room, at all this heavyweight team. And I'm thinking as a dad, I'm thinking, here's this girl coming and looking up at this room full of heavyweights and she's kind of a bit intimidated.
Mm.
So what I did was, I said, Van, you guys can leave now, go and have a few beers, but I'll work with Sinead alone. So I chased them and I'm done, just give Sinead a hug. And I said, don't worry about all that. You and I are going to work together. And we did. And
what Van song? For Six. This is a six-pointer, if you can remember that. No, you're okay. It's a long time ago. I must say, Phil, when he sings The Town I Love So Well, it would make you cry, a sad song, says Brian. What do you want to finish? Give us a minute or something or 30
seconds.
Okay,
give you a minute of The Old Man.
Right.
That's another one that gets a lot of great reaction. The tears have all been shed now. We've said our last goodbyes. His soul's been blessed he's laid to rest, and as now I feel alone. He was more than just my father, my teacher, my best friend. And he'll still be heard in the tunes we shared when I play them on my own. And I never will forget him, for he made me what I am. And though he may be gone, memories linger on. And I miss him, the old man.
Phil Coulter, thanks so much for sharing your songs, your stories, your melodies and your memories.
Paul Simon was a hard act to follow, I'll tell
you
that.
You did well, you did well. Good luck. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.